Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say that.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show, presented as always by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85. It is December 9th, 2019, for those of you listening live on the West Coast. It is the 10th of December for those listening on the East Coast or on demand. I always appreciate the support. I know we haven't been doing a lot of podcasts lately. It's been super busy, you know. Ordinarily, we start gearing up podcast season typically like first and second week of December, which is right about where we are right now. So you're going to start finding that we're doing podcasts at least three times a week. That will be my commitment going forward, whether that's with somebody co-hosting or me flying solo. I will grind this out for you guys. I've been getting a lot of people asking me about it, and then also getting a lot of people asking me about when I'm going to ditch Blog Talk, which is soon, hopefully soon. I still have some production things that I need help with. But definitely going to be by the beginning of the year, at least, at worst, I guess I should say, for getting rid of Blog Talk. But in the meantime, this is where we'll be. I'm here going to talk about the slate of games on FanDuel and DraftKings for tomorrow. One of the main reasons also we haven't really been doing podcasts, in addition to being busy, you know, this is the first year that I really grinded college football. So I didn't, you know, I had really tied up with that. I've been dabbling with NFL, which went well last weekend. I had Aaron Jones, low owns. Shout out there. Yeah, yeah. But no, now that that stuff's wrapping up and the slates for college basketball will start to get bigger, Saturday slates won't be so, you know, lousy contests and small because of football. All that football money should start gathering and you know, coming over to our side of things. So. We did have a two-game slate today with Duquesne's and Columbia. That's always a fun game. And Iowa, who I hate, and Minnesota. So at least DraftKings is still putting out slates. I realize a two-game slate has very little skill. It's maybe a taboo thing to say, but it's really the case if we're being honest, right? So at least they're putting out that stuff. They do have a showdown tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. my time, Fordham versus Bryant. They have had Bryant on the slate earlier this year. I believe it was against Rutgers, if my memory serves correct. So they've been doing these morning showdowns when there are games. And that's great. I mean, that just brings more people into it. Their last time they had a showdown in the morning was a couple of days ago, and I thought there'd be an overlay on it, and it actually all filled up. So that's exciting. If you're looking to play that slate tomorrow morning, you know, captain options, I will say this for the game. Adam Grant from Bryant is definitely somebody who you want to look at captaining. The prices are pretty fair on everyone, maybe even a little under, so it's not going to be really that difficult for you to roster who you want. Ken Palm projection on the game is 67-60 in favor of Fordham. They are their tempo ranking is 313, so very slow, and Bryant's tempo ranking is 55th. So Fordham's getting a nice tempo boost from Bryant. As I mentioned, Adam Grant, he was the guy that we used on that slate when they verifying that now. It was against Rutgers on the start of the year. He was a low-owned guy that I had that completely crushed it. We were on a nice streak there for a while, nabbing these high shot rate, high usage mid-major guards that just smashed it for us. So he does have a 31% shot rate and a 28% usage rate. In addition, he draws almost 5 fouls per 40, so a very good, safe option, if that even exists right now. I'd say for and other guys for Bryant, Ikenna and Luba. He was the guy that was like near min price on the slate, and even though he was starting games, so he is an option that I like. He's priced at 9. Well, that's in the captain. Excuse me. I don't recommend captaining him. He's a price at 6K, so somebody that you want to build your team around or have him in your core. Antoine Portley is a captain option at 7-4. I personally like Jalen Cobb. He's 6-8 on the showdown slate here. I have him in Dynasty, so I might be a little partial, but he's just a guy that plays a lot of minutes. Usage rate isn't necessarily as high, but he contributes in most categories and typically won't kill you, so he's pretty safe for 20-25, I think, in this particular matchup. You definitely want to lean heavier on the Fordham side. They're at home. They're getting a pace boost. They're playing a team that doesn't necessarily like to play defense all that much. Chuba Oham is another guy to look at. Anyi Ayisi, I'm sure I'm saying that name wrong. And then some of you may remember the name Ertan Gatsi. He was a former DePaul commit. He is now, you know, he's on Fordham now. He had a nice game of 40 fantasy points in their last one against Manhattan. Problem with him is, and he is a starter, but he doesn't always play those full minutes. He did play, it was in an overtime game. He had 40 minutes in that game against Manhattan, 16 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. So he had a high score, you know, roughly like 24, 25 fantasy points, but he doesn't necessarily get that all the time. When you look at his game log here, let's pull it up real fast. So 26.5 last game in 40 minutes. The game before that, he played 14 and had 8 in the game against Western Kentucky. RIP Charles Basie, by the way, didn't die for real, but he is out for the year with a terrible, terrible ACL tear. Feel very bad for him. I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to digress too much, but Basie was the man. He was projected to be an NBA guy, and now he's come back, you know, this year and is not able to capitalize on that draft capital. So, selfishly, he may come back to CBB for another year for us to use, but you feel really bad for a guy when that happens. Anyhow, that game against WKU, he had 28 minutes, 10 points and a rebound at 16 fantasy points. So, he's not really a super appetizing guy. In this particular showdown slate, you don't really need to go down to that area, I guess. I think if you're playing multiple lineups, he's certainly worth a look. But I think it's mostly poorly Grant, Ohams, Cobb, and Dugba, and then, you know, someone between either Elizi for Fordham, or if you want to take another guy on Bryant, guy I'm looking at right now, Holly Elysius, all these names, man. If you don't know, now you know, Charles Pride is going to be out with an ankle injury for at least the next several weeks. So he is not on the injury report on DraftKings. There's no O next to his name, so use that as a bit of an edge, if you will, for the showdown. He's 8-2 on there, so I don't know if people are going to mindlessly just click him in, because if you're not paying attention, you might look at his game logs and say, oh, well, this guy's getting 30 minutes, averaging, you know, 24 fantasy points a game. Yeah, let me click him in. You don't want to do that because he's not playing. All right, that's all I'm going to talk about on the showdown slate. I'm not really here. No, you guys don't really probably want to hear me talk about it for too much, all right? So let's dive right in. If anybody is listening live and wants to call in, number is 515-602-9782. Also, if you want to be a part of the content or you want to subscribe to our RotoCurve package and you have not yet, wondering what it's all about, www.rotocurve.com/college-basketball. We have weekly packages as low as $10, so you can test this out, see what it's about. We offer cheat sheets. I have game blurbs. I talk about, you know, usage rates, all that good stuff. The podcast is still free. The link is on there. And then we have a Slack chat where everybody, you know, kind of talks strategy. What I like to use it for and what people, I think, get the most out of the Slack chat is that we post all injury updates in there, starting lineups. If it's not me, because sometimes life gets in the way, or I'm at work, or, you know, something comes up, or I don't get the update fast enough, there's always somebody in my Slack that has my back that is posting the lineups for us. Or if somebody's a late scratch, there was a couple of slates ago where there was like four guys, there was no news at all. It seemed like it was going to be a calm, cool, everybody was chilling, made their lineups early, and then like 10 minutes to lock, this guy's out, this guy's out, this guy's game, you know, all this stuff started happening. And we're able to get that info to our stuff. So you definitely want to be a part of the package and the content and the squad for that reason alone. It definitely pays it off. I know some of you ask me questions on Twitter or other, you know, avenues, Discord, whatever, and I try to answer those as soon as I can, but the people in my Slack are obviously going to take precedence because, you know, we're in a group there and you know, it's paid content. If you want to do beyond just a week, it is $32 per month, and then we have a special yearly rate if you're interested in doing that. Shout out to the people who have signed up for a year. I appreciate the support. Doing big things. We have had a really nice year so far. Tons of my subs have either binked or near taking down a GPP so far. The last couple of days, not going to lie, have been a little rough. Full disclosure, you know, I took down the 150 and the 33 on Thursday. I felt good about that. That was that Auburn slate, and the DFS guys blessed me with an Auburn overtime, which helped. since then, I've been on the wrong side of the double, 3 out of 4th place. So, bounce back season, y'all. I was hoping Johnny might call in and give me a little good luck, you know, because he sometimes, when he calls in the show, the next day we smash. So, it looks like we're going to have the benefit of hearing his voice. So sad, so shit.
So,
shame. All right.
Well, let's dive into the slate right now.
Maryland versus Penn State is the first game. Now, there is one game on FanDuel that's not on DraftKings, two that are on DraftKings that aren't on FanDuel. I will specify which those are when we get through them. KenPom projection on the Maryland game is Maryland 74, Penn State 73. Fast teams, man. Maryland 93rd in tempo and Penn State 37th. That might surprise some people on Penn State. They are maybe exceeding expectations early. They had that loss to Ole Miss, which was a bad loss. They were way ahead of them. And then they got shelled by Ohio State on Saturday. I don't think that we should allow that Ohio State game to really sway us on Penn State and say that, you know, oh, wow, they're really bad. Ohio State is beyond what we thought they'd be. They are just kicking the living daylights out of people. They're 9-0. They should kick Penn State. They should kick Carolina. I mean, they held North Carolina to 49, which we're maybe finding out isn't that great of a thing now because North Carolina can't score beyond Cole Anthony. But at the time, that was amazing. They shit-kicked Villanova earlier in the year. They beat, Cincinnati gave them, a game that was 64-56. That's typically a war anyways. But they have otherwise just beaten up everybody. Kent State, Purdue, Fort Wayne, Stetson, UMass, Lowell, okay, these aren't teams that are, expected to do anything. They beat them up like they're supposed to. But when you beat Penn State by 30-plus, when you knock North Carolina around by 20-plus, when you beat Villanova by 20-plus, I mean, you really have to respect them. So I'm not going to hold that game against Penn State at all because Penn State has, absolutely destroyed Syracuse, absolutely destroyed Wake Forest, destroyed Georgetown. They've beaten up on some, teams that aren't necessarily great. But teams, you wouldn't expect them to knock them around by that score. So I know the line on this game Rob was talking about earlier in Twitter, DM, was -1 for Maryland, which he was shocked about. I think the general consensus by people, and I'm not saying he doesn't watch basketball because he does, but people who maybe don't follow it as closely are going to see that line and say, oh, Penn State, that's a team that was 14-18 last year. And you wouldn't think they'd be this good, right? They lost Rasir Bolton to Iowa State. Josh Reeves graduated, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, this team's bare covered. What are they going to do? We know Lamar Stevens is going to be good. Mike Watkins, he's kind of, I don't want to call him a head case or anything because that's probably not fair to say, but, he has his ups and downs, that we know about, and he has some games where he completely disappears. He has other games where he looks like, Shaquille O'Neal reincarnated. When they get him playing like, this massive beast that he was, where he put up 50 fantasy points, I think it was against Syracuse, they're really tough to beat. And then Mirion Jones has taken a huge step forward. I don't think anybody saw this coming from Mirion Jones. I think all the people that follow college basketball or do analysis on it or watch it, I think it's fair to say we all thought Miles Dredd was going to be the guy who took the step forward with Reeves gone, that Dredd was going to take, all these threes and score, and he hasn't really done it at all. He hasn't, even in their big wins, I haven't been that impressed with him, and I've been surprised. But Mirion Jones has been really knocking down a lot of threes, scoring a lot of points, getting a lot of steals, doesn't really offer anything else in terms of peripheral. And I had a sub tell me I didn't know how to say it right, so I had to make sure I said it right. But yeah, his so his with his weights and everything, 21% shot rate, 2% steal rate, shooting 41% from behind the arc, and that's on 49 attempts. That's impressive. That's definitely impressive. I think that he's picked up the slack where Rasir Bolton left. Bolton's obviously playing really well in Iowa State. If he was still on Penn State, that'd be even scarier. But be that as it may, I think that Jones, Stevens, and Watkins are all in play in this game against Maryland. I don't have an issue with any of them. Right now, price-wise on those guys, Lamar Stevens is 8K, Mike Watkins 7.9 on DraftKings, and then Mirion Jones still a fairly priced 6K. Starting to get, for a guy that doesn't really contribute in rebounds, assists, occasionally steals, don't necessarily like to pay that price. You might look at his game log and say he had 12 fantasy points against Ohio State. Again, I'm really not keeping that game and holding against guys right now. Before that, he had taken 13 shots against Wake Forest, 13 against Syracuse, and 10 against Mississippi. And, you know, two or three of those he shot over 50%. So I've been impressed by him. I think he makes a fine cash play. I worry a bit about his upside at the 6K price just because he doesn't offer me anything else besides true scoring. But I think for cash, he's going to shoot enough in this game that he's fine. You know, somewhere about 23 to 26 fantasy points. You know, not sexy, but I think he gets it done if you're looking for somebody with a safer floor. Mike Watkins, on the other hand, I just don't think I can ever really trust him in cash games. I want to. There's been some spots where I was like, damn, I really wish I had Mike Watkins here. You know, that game against Ole Miss, he had 30 fantasy points at halftime against Ole Miss. I know because I was, you know, in the 150 on DK and somebody had him there and I was just completely flabbergasted that he was doing that. He had 8 blocks in that game and it was just completely ridiculous when he's playing like that. When Mike Watkins is having chased down LeBron-esque blocks and dunks, you know it's going to be a long afternoon. Even though Ole Miss came back to win that game, so got to give it up to him. The game after that against Syracuse, he had 48.5. The game after that against Wake Forest, 45. Now, you saw what happened when he gets in foul trouble and neutralized like he was against Ohio State. He was, for me, an easy fade. He had 4 fouls in 17 minutes, just ineffective. So that is the dark side of Mike Watkins, unfortunately. If he picks up, you know, two quick fouls, then his day is ruined. So you're really at 7-9, you're rolling the dice hard in cash. He does have a very nice, healthy fantasy point per minute total going on right now because of those huge games he's had. I love him for tournaments. I think it's fine at home. If this was a road game, I think I'd be a little more concerned about my use of him, even in tournaments. But, no, I think it's fine. That is more difficult, though, when you have for 100 more Lamar Stevens, who's a guy who's rarely going to get you under 30 fantasy points. Even against Ohio State, he was right around almost 20, which, you know, would be a certain disaster at 8K. But I don't think he's going to be the one to torpedo your lineup. So I think Lamar Stevens is fine there. If you're picking between Stevens and Watkins, Stevens is my cash guy. I don't see him hitting 50 very often like Watkins would, but also don't see the bottle falling out on him. Maryland, let's talk about Maryland. They are the ultimate tilt so far, right? I don't know how many of you have had your difficulties with them. It seems to me that in games, I think we got to figure it out, though, in games where it's a semi-blowout or it won't be close or, you know, game plan is they can just stuff it inside to six, you know, Jalen Smith, McNeigh, they can just give it to sticks over and over again. Cowan is just not your guy. You don't want to play Cowan in any of those scenarios. Now, if it's a game where the other team has serviceable interior players, as Penn State does, it's a game that's going to be close, as this is projected to be, and it's a game where the pace is pretty fast on paper. This is a spot you can use Anthony Cowan Jr. And feel okay about it. I still don't think that I would be using him in cash anymore. I think I've sworn him off for cash. I just after the game against Notre Dame, where I learned the hard way, again, that he's not cash safe, and he had 16 fantasy points, and Ayala and Morcell were the ones to go off. I just don't want to use him in cash anymore. It's going to give me more gray hairs than I'm already beginning to get. I do see against Illinois the 43 fantasy points. The game was close. The game was faster paced, and he was needing to shoot the ball a lot. He also had 7 rebounds to go along with 20 points and 6 assists, as well as 3 steals. So he was near triple-double alert there. Cowan's an excellent tournament guy. He's 7'8". His price goes down $200 after the 43 game. Okay. I much prefer him somewhere around 6'9 to 7'2, 7'3. Those low 7 range. When you start getting up closer to 8, and I have to get 32 from him, at worst, it worries me a lot. Sticks is a nice play at 8K. He's always, you know, in play there. I would be concerned about fouls a little bit. He's been much more in control this year of his fouls, knock on wood. last year, he and Bruno really kind of seemed to struggle with that. And you would think that, with another year under his belt, all the weight that he's gained, the muscle he's gained, that he's really worked on his game, and you can tell. So he hasn't been getting in foul trouble quite as much. Been blocking the shit out of the ball, grabbing a ton of rebounds. He's actually averaging 14 and 10 right now. So, you know, for a guy that's 8K, and if he just hits his average of 14 and 10 and gives you a couple blocks, a couple steals, he's going to completely shatter his tag. The problem is, you know, down low, Watkins and Stevens and Herrera and some of these other guys, you know, it might not be as easy a time for him to get rebounds. You know, it could be something similar to the Marquette game back on December 1st where he did struggle with fouls. But even when he was on the court, he was really having a hard time getting rebounds over some of the bigger bodies that Marquette had. And, you know, the Theo Johns of the world and their other guys. So I don't want to say that he's a lock to hit one of these 40, 50-point ceiling games, because certainly not that. But I think he's pretty safe side for, like, 35 to 36. That's my prediction for Sticks tomorrow, right around 36 fantasy points. But, again, it's a guy that I'm scared to use in cash. Even though this game, you know, has the overtime potential, even though this game is going to be fast-paced, and even though this game is, full of usually exciting fantasy players, I really have a hard time with Maryland. People in my Slack chat are constantly tilting Maryland. The other issue with Maryland is they're habitual hard, like, slow starters. So, meaning, 7 minutes into the game, Cowan's got 1.5 fantasy points. Sticks has got 5 fantasy points. Maryland has got 14 points. It's the 10-minute mark. My guy is 1X. And they usually get there. Like, even last game, Cowan had a slow start. I think in the first 10 minutes, he had, like, 4 fantasy points. People were starting to bitch. And then all of a sudden, the second half, he just goes off. So you always have that comfortability level, knowing that they in the second half are going to step it up. You just have to. If you're going to roster Maryland players, just know you're going to tilt. You're going to go through some first half woes, if you will. So just keep that in mind. Daryl Morsell is a guy who's been pretty reliable. His price is 5.7 right now. I don't like that price for him, simply because of the fact that he can have a game where he puts up 15 fantasy points. You see, against Illinois, he wasn't really much of a factor. The game, you know, once it goes into Cowan mode when it's close, the problem is Morsell and Ayala and these guys don't get enough shots because Cowan and Wiggins are taking all of them, and then Jalen is getting the leftovers. So that's the issue with paying them their 6K for Daryl Morsell. I hope he goes off tomorrow. He is on my Dynasty team. I did trade for him and Farron Hunt the other day in my Dynasty League. Hunt was obviously the piece I was after, but I'm happy to take Morsell as well. A serviceable 18 to 20 fantasy point guy. So I hope he does well. I don't think I can be using him at almost 6K on DraftKings, so that might be a little bit too much for my heart to handle. Over on FanDuel, take a look here, 5-1. You know, he's okay there if you need him. I've been finding on FanDuel, and I'll maybe talk a little bit of that too, that you can dip under the 5K range for like 2 plays still to this day. And it's very wise. I joke around with a friend of mine in Discord that it's part of, you know, my buy low model. So if you see a guy like Trent Frazier who's toiling down at 4-5 because he's had a couple bad games, but you know he's capable of hitting 30, matchup's okay, but it's more the dude's 4-5 and he has this upside. He's probably going to give me 16, but it's worth it because he's 4-5. I can stuff in Obi Toppin and Luca Garza and you know a Daniel Arturo on FanDuel. I can just go totally stud crazy on FanDuel. That's been the strat for years, it seems, and that continues to be the strat. So we will find some plays there under 5K for you. But at 5-1, I think Morsell's just fine. All right, and let's go to this FanDuel-only game. This feels like something that DraftKings would have done. They do have a different bye game, if you will, on there, which we'll get to. But they have Brown versus St. John's on FanDuel. St. John's predicted to win on Campomb 80-67. Pace-wise, this is the best one. St. John's 16th in tempo ranking, Brown 94th. So I have been having a lot of success, especially on FanDuel, because they seem to have St. John's more than DraftKings. Not sure why, but that's just the way their stats are set up, I guess, because of their opponents. So I've been having a lot of success stacking for and against St. John's. It's going to be something I continue to do because they're a fast-paced team. The teams they're playing usually getting a pace boost because there's not a lot faster than them, even though Brown is fast. So that's going to be a game that you guys want to target on there. Let's see, for usual suspects for St. John's, LJ Figueroa, he's been doing this thing lately where he has a huge first half, and then he just goes silent in the second. He had, I think, 17-6, I want to say, in the first half of their last game against West Virginia. I had Elijah Hughes in Syracuse who had a monster first half too, but he wasn't that highly owned, but Figueroa was, and I thought, well, that's just going to cancel it out. And then I think he ended up finishing with 17 points, and he just didn't get any stats in that second half. I didn't watch the game, so I can't speak to it, but I'm pretty sure he had 17 and like 3 or 17 and 4 in the first half, and now looking at his box score, he finished with 17 and 4. So I don't know. It looks like maybe he was in foul trouble. Not completely sure. And then the other games, he's had a slow first half because I rostered him when he was on DraftKings, and then the second half he went off. So if he can put together two halves of basketball, you know, you're looking at somebody who's going to smash the doors off his price because we know that he's the stud for them now. 26% shot rate, 3% block rate, 4% steal rate, draws 5 fouls per 40. I don't really need to yammer on about him. Mustafa Heron, 26% shot rate, 26% usage rate. Now, he is the guy on the last slate that St. John's was on here on FanDuel. He was priced really low. I'll pull it up real quick here because he was like 4-5. Or no, he was like 5K, I want to say. And he's 5-2 now. He's definitely in my buy low model, if you will. He had just 16 against West Virginia. But I think that's still cheap enough to take a shot on him, expecting him to probably in this matchup get around 20 fantasy points. He's not offering us a lot in terms of rebounds, assists, and other categories, but he's just having such a huge shot rate that he's going to, you know, at this price, just volume his way there, especially in this particular matchup. So I think he's fine to use. I definitely am looking at him. Julian Champagne at 6.7 is maybe a little higher than I want to pay. He's been nice, though. You know, the 25% combined rebounding rate, a 3% block rate, and almost 4% steal rate. So he's nice with it. I really like him in his game. 6'7", maybe a little higher. When 300 more, I can just go up and get, you know, LJ Figs. Josh Roberts at 6'2 is definitely appealing. Excuse me. Not necessarily the high usage rate or shot rate, but his rebounding rate is 30% combined. You always like to see that. You know, he's facing off against Brown, who, in terms of their rebounding numbers, they're an elite offensive rebounding team, but defensive rebounding, they leave a little bit to be desired. So I could see Josh Roberts having a nice game on the offensive glass, but they're going to have to do some work on the defensive side of things. And I think Rasheem Dunn at 4'8 is still very much in play. See what his actual efficiency numbers are for that price. You know, you would ordinarily think maybe he's a lock. 24% shot rate, 26% usage rate, assist rate of 21%, which you love. Draw 6 fouls per 40. He just hasn't shot the ball very well. He's 21% three-point shooter right now on 24 attempts, which is 43% inside the arc on 44 attempts. So his issue, when it's not, you know, any opportunity to get bonuses like on DraftKings, is that, you know, turns the ball over a lot, which kills you on FanDuel with -1. And he doesn't make a ton of shots. What he does do is get himself to the free throw line because he likes to drive, and he has that high assist rate. So you see that last game against West Virginia in 25 minutes, 13-5-4 with 2 steals, which is good for 25 fantasy points. He does have a floor as low as 9, which you saw there a couple games before against St. Francis. And then the game against Colorado, he had 27 fantasy points, 14-3-3 with 3 steals. If he keeps his turnovers down, I think he should hit at least 16 or more fantasy points. I think you're probably looking right around 4x at worst on FanDuel. If you get a ton of turnovers, though, you can be in a world of hurt. So keep that in mind. Those are the guys that I'm looking at there. For Brown, this Brown team is very heavily levered towards two guys, Tam Nang Cho and Brandon Anderson. Tam Nang has a 30% usage rate, 28% shot rate, 29% combined rebounding rate, 21% assist rate, 3% block rate. He does draw a high number of fouls, almost 6 per 40, which could give our man Roberts from St. John's a little trouble. Brandon Anderson has a 27% shot rate, 26% usage rate, assist rate hovering right around 24%, steal rate 3%, and he also draws 6.5 fouls per 40. So there's two guys right there that can, you know, like to draw fouls, like to get to the paint, like to drive, can draw any fat number of fouls on whoever's guarding them. So Brandon Anderson playing the point. And Tam Nang, I believe he plays more 3 and the 4. So, you know, that could be it. Could be LJ. Could be foul troubles for LJ. You got to be careful with him knowing that. And then I think Rutherford ends up starting at point, but could be foul trouble for Dunn because Dunn's been getting more of the minutes at point lately. Their home floor, I don't necessarily worry about fouls, or I try not to. They're still going to start Rutherford at point guard from what I read. Dunn is going to be their super sub, but I think that Dunn is closing games. When I watched their last one, it wasn't the last game that they had, but it was I think the one against not Vermont, the game after that. And Dunn's been coming off the bench and then closing games just because, you know, he's been so good, and I personally think he's better than Rutherford. Price-wise for the Brown guys, Tam Nang is 6.6K. So, I mean, you're committing a lot there. Brandon Anderson is 7.2. That's higher than LJ. If I was going to play one of the Brown guys, it would be Tam Nang at 6.6. He was good for them last year. He put up some 40-point spots, a little bit different of a team. You see this year against Bryan, he had 39. Against NJIT, he had 30. And then he's had several other games of 27, 28, and 30. So, you know, right around 30 fantasy points at 6'6", I think that's an attainable number for him. I would much rather play him over somebody like Champagne for 100 less, and I would play him for 400 more over Roberts. That's kind of where my head's at there. And then between Anderson and LJ, I take the home guy with LJ at 7K. But for tournaments or stackable options, because a lot of you guys like to ask me about stacking options, you know, Brown and St. John's is a very appealing option on this actual FanDuel slate. All right, moving on. Louisville versus Texas Tech. Now, this one's going to be probably a better real-life basketball game than fantasy game because Louisville is the real deal, guys, if you haven't been paying attention. Texas Tech historically has been a slower-paced, high, you know, efficiency defense team. They haven't really been that good on defense to start. Personnel's a little bit different, but let's talk about that here in a second. KenPom projection on the game is 68-60 in favor of Louisville. They're 299th in pace. Texas Tech ranked 235th, so still slow. But Texas Tech, like I said, they haven't been that terrorizing defense like they were in years past. And obviously when you lose, you know, a lotto pick in Jarrett Culver, a glue guy like Matt Mooney, you know, eternally been there forever, Noreen Zadi Odiase, who else was it? Brandon, you know, heady veteran Brandon Francis. You know, that's a lot to lose. Yeah, you know, and they just reload. The year before that, they lost a lot too, and they just reload. You know, they get the freshman, the highly rated freshman, Jamius Ramsey, who's hurt right now. I think he's a GPD. Tyler Edwards makes a step up. They got Terrence Shannon, who showed out in a big way last game. You know, Davide Moretti is back. And then they got a couple of, you know, grad transfers and Chris Clark, who's been very good, and TJ Holyfield, who's been okay. So a much different looking team. Moretti has been awful. You can't roster him. You know, he doesn't do anything besides shoot the ball. He hasn't done that well, and if he's not shooting the ball, he's completely useless. I don't want to be so hard on the guy, but you know, I can't have him. I can't spend the money they're asking for him and get 35 minutes. Let's look at the last game real quick. 10 points. He made one shot out of 10, and he got all of his points at the free throw line basically, and turned it over 5 times. Yeah, no thanks. It's just not going to work for me. The guys I do want to roster, though, and I'm already 6'1". If he's like 4'8 or something, then I would be much more apt to roster him. Ramsey, as I mentioned, is questionable. I think it's closer to a game time decision. If he's out again, Terrence Shannon Jr. saw a small price increase to 5'2". He was just a monster last game. I had used him two slates ago against Iowa at 4'7", when he got 25. Unfortunately, I only had tournament shares against DePaul when he went for 40. Was not on my main team, which was a mistake, but he is very, very talented. I think we saw his breakout there against DePaul. I don't see him pulling that back, and why would they want to? They did lose that game, but that he is playing incredibly well. So I do like him at 5'2". If Ramsey's out, even against Louisville, who's a pretty bad matchup on paper for most teams, I don't know that I could personally get away from him at that price. That's just, there's too much upside, even if it is a tough matchup. Looking down at his FanDuel price, pull that up real quick, he's 4'9". So, yeah, I'm still probably going to be on him. I'd also like Chris Clark. Tyson not as appealing. Definitely not in play if Ramsey plays. If he doesn't play, maybe still get some shares. I don't really like it because I don't see him hitting that 40-point game like he did against Creighton. I probably see similar to the 22 to 23 like he had against DePaul or LIU Brooklyn. So it's a little bit of a tough price to pay. I don't want to be going too ham on this game anyways when I expect it to be slow. If Texas Tech is going to score 60 points per Ken Pom, I'm not stacking Texas Tech, right? Kyler Edwards is always a fine option normally, but I'm not going to go for him at 6'5 either. So for me, it's Shannon. If Ramsey's out, even if Ramsey plays, I think on FanDuel especially, I'm probably going to have, I'd say, a very high number of Shannon shares. I don't know that he'd be on my main team without Ramsey being out, but certainly close. For Louisville, they're basically matchup proof at this point. It's just they're always priced up, especially on DraftKings. Nora's 8'3", which is a pretty fair price for him considering what he can do. You definitely want him in games where it's projected to be closer because he will be relied upon more. To start the year, I think he was, closer to 9K, 8'6", 8'8", somewhere in there. So the price dropping a little bit is nice, especially coming off three straight games of 30, 44, and 36. Before that, he had a 33, 43, and then a 23. So he's a pretty safe bet at the low 8Ks here to still hit 4X, even in this matchup. So looking at it now and talking about it out loud, and actually diving in, I think that Nora is a very safe main team play. It would make a lot of sense that he would probably end up on the chalky side, even though I don't think this slate necessarily has obvious slam dunk plays that the whole regular group of players is going to be on. But I could definitely see Nora, grabbing a sizable ownership somewhere between 20 and 30% cash games. Dwayne Sutton is always going to be a GPP play for me going forward. I just, there's no way in hell I can use him in cash at the 6'8 tag. The price is coming down a little bit. He was 7'2 last game against Pitt. You see he had 19. He's a pretty consistent 20 fantasy point guy. I know he's averaging around 25.4 on DraftKings. And he's got games of 30, 35. But I think our money can be better spent than Dwayne Sutton. Now, if you're running, multiple lineups in that $15 GPP tomorrow and you want to have exposure, then knock yourself out. But I think you're really walking a fine line if you run him in cash. Enoch is 6'2". His price is starting to come down. The reason why? Da-da-da-da. Young KD, a.k.a. Malik Williams, is back. He's looking healthy. He's not starting yet, but he's starting to cut into the minutes. This is something we talked about on one of our previous shows. There hasn't been many this season, but we did talk about Malik when he returned cutting into Enoch and not paying that crazy price he was to start the year because look at Malik Williams' minutes. He had 20 against Pitt. Before that, when he first came back, he got 5 to get his feet wet. And he had 19, 18, 14, and 20. But you throw out the Michigan game, which he only had 7 in the 14. That was an ugly game, say. He had 30 against Pitt. They went off for 13-11 in 20 minutes. He had 22 against Western Kentucky in 18 minutes. 18 in 19 minutes against Akron. And then the game where he only played 5 minutes, he had 8.5 fantasy points. He is absolutely a fantasy point machine. I wish that he would get back in the starting lineup over Enoch ASAP. Because he's better, in my opinion, and I've always been a fan. You know, ever since I heard that announcer call him young KD last year, I've just been smitten with the guy. So at 4-8 on DraftKings, I'm going to have some shares. I haven't tried to build a lineup yet, so I don't necessarily know what my construction is going to look like. But he's 4-8 on both sites. That's an appealing price to me for a guy that, you know, was likely probably only going to see 20 minutes tomorrow. But he does enough in those you know 20 minutes that he makes it worth it at that tag. If he was like 6'8", or 6'2", or something like that, then he'd be in no fly zone. But he's still under 5K. And if he gets you an 18, you're pretty happy with that score, especially if it allows you to come up and get a guy like Nora, come up and get a guy like Tyler Bay, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, a guy like Vital from UConn. So that's my take on May League. I am not a Ryan McMahon guy. I won't see me rostering him. I'm not a Darius Perry guy. I know he's 4'7", and I see him bounce back and forth on the slates between popular and not popular. This is a guy who there's guys in the non-conference schedule dating back to the beginning of time that will look like superstars. Jalen Harris from Arkansas last year was one of them. Looked like an absolute stud. Gets into the conference play and starts putting up 5, 10, 18 on a good day. Now, we are not out of you know, conference. We're not out of the non-con quite yet. But Louisville did play Pitt, and in that 23 minutes against Pitt, he had 12 fantasy points. And I'm just saying, I think Darius Perry is who Darius Perry is. I don't think he's that 37 fantasy point guy you saw against Youngstown State in the blowout. I don't think he is a guy that's going to normally drop 20-plus fantasy points. I think he's a guy who's going to defer a lot. You know, if they need a play, they need a, you know, a timely bucket, or they need a clutch rebound, or a guy to, you know, to get defended well. That's who Darius Perry is. He's a guy you want on your basketball team, but I just don't think he's a really rosterable asset for us in daily fantasy. And I've just never been on that side of the fence that thought he was a play. If he ends up dropping 30 or 40 tomorrow, then I will gladly admit that I was wrong, but I don't personally see that. I do really like, not as a play tomorrow, but as a guy to watch, Samuel Williamson. You know, since May League got back, his minutes have also been affected just from a usage standpoint because, you know, they do run that bigger lineup now with young KD back. Williamson, if he went to a program where he got minutes right away, he would absolutely smash. He will be a guy on Louisville that we will be talking about on every week basis. He's just not that guy right now, and it may not come this year. But I won't surprise me that he has games of 20 plus fantasy points. So I wish we could use him. Probably can't tomorrow. Just a guy to keep an eye on. And then I'm still waiting for fresh Lamar Kimball to really, I don't know, break into this like 25 to 28 minute range. Louisville's kind of deep, admittedly, but Kimball came there for a reason. You know, they're going to need a veteran ball handler that can make, you know, a crunch time play, won't melt down in the crunch time, can play fairly mistake-free basketball when it's called for it. So that's what I'm really like, because there's going to be a slate where Lamar gets, you know, he gets going, he gets rolling, and the game's close, and Mac has to keep him in, and he's going to smash this tag of 4-1. You know, I don't have the testicular fortitude, as Mr. Nick Foley would say, to run him in my main lineup, but there's going to be a time where I have this sense that this is it, and I hope that, you know, I hope that when I have this vision of it happening, that you guys are able to follow me, similar to the way that I had that Trevlin Queen vision last year and a couple of others in my Slack chat that we joke about. But Lamar Kimball is definitely a guy who last year was, what, 7K, 8K? Obviously a different role for St. Joe's, not the same. but I gotta believe he can play over Perry and Ryan McMahon. Man, like, come on. So anyways, that's kind of where my head's at with this game. Terrence Shannon is my dude if Ramsey's out. Nora is a solid play. Sutton, if you need GPP exposure, and then young KD is a guy that I'm strongly considering in all formats. Next game, let's talk about Butler versus Baylor. The Butler Bulldogs. Rob has been letting all of Twitter know, and especially those of us in a chat, that Butler is the best team in the world, best Big East team. They're gonna win conference. They're going to the Final Four. Great team, undefeated. So they should have no problem winning this game, but it could be a tough one for them. KenPom has it 67-63. Two slow teams, Baylor 202nd in pace ranking, Butler 339. Both teams are very good defensively. This isn't a game that it's an interesting game to me because I want to see how the community treats it, because Kamar Baldwin has been fucking absolutely huge amount of chalk. And I'm sorry for cursing for those of you that are listening with your children right now, Jen. I apologize. Earmuffs. I'll say earmuffs next time. But Kamar has been this massively owned guy. And I have used Kamar a fair bit in the last 2 years myself. And I know every time he's under 8K, which has been forever so far, the book says you got to roster Kamar Baldwin when he's under 8K, but he is so dependent on matchups, in my opinion. I know against Stanford he smashed it. I know in the game against Ole Miss he smashed it. But those are games that he should have smashed it. And now against Missouri it was pretty chalky in 36 minutes. Missouri's a very bad matchup, very very ugly team to play. He had the 24. And then against Florida, which is on paper not a good matchup, he had 23 fantasy points. So I guess it's really up to you to decide, is this, you know, because he's looking healthy, he's getting that volume, he's contributing in most categories. So I guess it's up to decide if Baylor is a tough matchup or not, if you think. They're defensively, Butler's 32nd ranked in the nation, 12th ranked offense, Baylor 21st ranked offense, and 15th ranked defense. So these are two very efficient offenses and two very efficient defenses, and both like to play slow. Baylor a little faster than Butler, but they still play slow overall. And also there's a concern with the fact that Kamar and Michael Enzi, who admittedly I have rostered twice this year, I'm sorry, Bryce Enzi, and he let me down both times, and I'm probably swearing him off. He looked really good. He was one of the guys that against, you know, weaker competition looks like a stud. He had me fooled for a minute. It's a very appetizing, you know, combined rebounding rate. Roughly, was it 31%, 3% skill rate, but he doesn't get the volume. His shot rate is under 20%, and he just doesn't get any shots because you got Sean McDermott there shooting the ball, you got Kamar Baldwin taking 35% of the shots, and then you got Jordan Tucker when he comes off the bench taking 24% of shots. So there's just no shots for Enzi. But I digress, back to Baldwin. Obviously a monster, 30% usage rate, 20% assist rate, free throw line, he shoots 96%, one of the best free throw shooters in the country. He looked great. Kamar is a good guy. I like him. He's just effed me over so many times in the last 2 years. Cost me a seat twice last year. I'm not trying to hold that against him, but it's one of those spots where I'm very curious to see if he's going to end up being chalked tomorrow, because I think a lot of people are at this point with him where when he's under that 8K tag, which apparently DK is going to keep him that way forever, where he's an autoplay, and I don't think this is a game that I want to use him at 7-5. Now, in the 150 tomorrow, if I see him being 60% again and he drops, 45 to end me, then so be it. But I think that I would take that fade more times than I would just follow the chalk there. I guess we need talking to Rob, silly Rob. I wish he would be a part of the show more. Very disappointed that he hasn't been able to yet. But betting tout's gonna bet tout. Jordan Tucker, he did tell me prior to last game that Jordan Tucker was gonna go off. But to be fair, he tells me that every time. And Jordan Tucker had a nice game last game against Florida. You know, he had 13, 3, 1 in a block, 21 fantasy points. Price didn't move at all. He's again 4-1. I'm wondering if he'll end up being a popular value play, because if you recall last year, we continually rolled Jordan Tucker out there week after week after week, you know, and he always would he'd give us hope, right? He'd give us like a 25 or a 31 game, and we're like, oh, hell yeah. And then he would give us a 12, a 16, a 15, and it's just always at that price where you're negotiating with yourself and your process, and you're talking yourself into Jordan Tucker. And I feel like this might be a throwback to that, but I think he's burned people so many times over the last 2 years that people just look, they just glaze over him. So I don't know. It remains to be seen. I'm personally not tuned in to how the Butler ownership is going to go yet. I suspect as the day goes on, I will start to figure it out. But as of right now, I'm very curious what people's opinion on Butler is. Because Baylor's, they're no joke. The Huskies beat Baylor. So, I mean, you know, that's what it is. But Baylor is definitely no joke. 7-1 record, that loss to the Huskies. But, you know, they took care of business against Arizona, took care of business against Villanova. You know, and then they've had cupcakes the rest of the way. The only other legitimate team, the Huskies, they lost. But the big surprise to me is not necessarily that Tristan Clark, who, you know, is coming back from a very serious injury and just hasn't looked the same at all, and he was expected to. But the surprise to me is Freddie Gillespie. Now, if you told me that Tristan Clark was going to be essentially a non-factor to start the year and that Baylor would be 7-1 with their lone loss being to the Huskies, I would never have believed you. I would have probably bet money saying, no, that's not true. But Freddie Gillespie, who helped me last year win one of my seats to the Bracket Mania, I don't know what's gotten into him. Opportunity, I guess. You know, not fouling as much. He's had a couple games this year where he fouled. Last year was every game, but he is just putting up some raw numbers. He has a near 40% combined rebounding rate, just under 40. He has a 10% block rate, a 3.5% steal rate. You know, shot rate, 15% is not there, but he is putting up blocks and he is rebounding the ball like an absolute just crazy person right now. And you know, I wish I would have used him in cash against Arizona, because we're gonna, as the Arizona slates start to roll out more, it's gonna be automatic to take an athletic, active, good interior player against them, because even though they're a good team, their guards are good, and Zeke Nanji is good. They're not good defensively in the paint yet. That may change, but right now it's just throw them out there. Gillespie was able to stay on the court for 36 minutes against Arizona. Had 17 and 13 with 5 blocks, 48 fantasy points at 6'8". Now, it might be a tough ask right now at 7'3". That is a very high price tag for a guy who could potentially give you 4, 18 maybe at worst, like against Nova. Excuse me. Now, you see what could happen, though, like the game there on the 21st. He had 4 fouls and was in early foul trouble. I did do my homework there to check that. He had 3 fantasy points. Now, if you roster a guy at 7'3 and he gives you 3, there's absolutely zero chance that you're going to cash anything. People just aren't making enough mistakes like the old days for you to recover from a mistake like that. You can recover from a 20. You can recover from a 4K guy getting you 8. But you cannot recover from a 3 on a 7'3". You're just not going to happen. But if you look at, you know, everything else, he's been pretty consistently hitting 30. He's averaging 30 fantasy points right now. So I definitely think he's in play. It's probably going to be more of a tournament play at this point. You know, his fouls called rate is only 3-1. So it's not even really been an issue, knock on wood, because last year it was over 6. You know, so that's a drastic improvement for him. last year he was fouling out early. He was a big risk. You couldn't really even use him, and it kept his price down. Now we're seeing him stay on the court. Tristan Clark's not really been effective, and it's been the Freddie Gillespie show. So I think he's a very fantastic tournament play, but, you know, being that this is an uglier game, there should be a lot of rebounding opportunities, so I like him on that side of things. But I worry a little bit about the fouls, even though his foul rate is down. Jared Butler's there at 7-6. That's okay. I don't think I'm paying that. Macy Oteague is a guy I'm pretty intrigued by. He's really good this season. Taking a look at some of his rates. 23% shot rate. Draws 4 fouls per 40. Only gets called for 1.3 fouls per 40. And then everything else is kind of just, you know, 18% combined rebounding rate, 17% assist rate. So nothing really jumping off the page there. But when you actually look at his game logs, or if you've watched any Baylor games, I've watched a couple this year, he's just a very active guy. Seems to always be around the ball, and he does just enough to continuously put up these numbers. So even though the efficiency rates don't jump off the paper, you look at his game log, he hasn't been under 20 fantasy points at all this year. So that's one of the safer 7K guys, just because he is so actively involved in every aspect, and he gets himself to the free throw line a good fair number amount, and he's taking a ton of shots. He's a volume shooter, so that's how he's getting to these 20 fantasy point numbers. And then if he gives you 4 or 5 rebounds, a couple assists, a block, or a steal, then he's just absolutely shattering it. So I like Macy Oteague for 600 cheaper than a Jared Butler, personally. Mark Vio is there at 5'4". He's a guy, I'll say. I just don't think he's a guy I could roster anymore. Dating back to last year, if you guys remember, it was just a guy that every time you rostered, he wouldn't do anything, and if he faded, he would end up going for 30. Now, it was usually, because they're always priced the same, Mario Kagler and Mark Vidal, and it was whichever one you didn't take went off. We don't have to worry about Kagler anymore because he's gone. He left. But Vidal's just, you know, he's not very good DFS play right now. So I'm staying away from him. Tristan Clark at 4K is just, it's so amazing to me that, it's sad, actually, because it worries me for guys like Charles Basie, who went through a big serious injury, and you don't know how he's going to come back. He's come back, and he's just, you know, he had the game against UW where he played 29 minutes. He's had a couple games here or there of 20, but, you know, Arizona, he could only handle 10 minutes. He's having injury issues, and it's sad. And if he's a fully healthy player at 4K, he would be a Dan Lockin load, but I don't even think at 4K we can use him right now, unfortunately. Other guys that you could potentially look at, 5K, Davion Mitchell, and 4'9", Devontae Bandu. I don't think any of them are particularly, like, solid plays by any means, but they're in that price point of being a tourney play that, could potentially use. Again, this is going to be more of a slobber knocker, if you will, and I just don't foresee me stacking it up. Butler side of things, as I already mentioned, just circling it back around, I'm not going to pay Bryce Nizzi's price of 6'6", even though that it's tempting. I gotta go to Bryce Nizzi anonymous. Baldwin at 7'5", you know, always in play for tourneys, I guess. Jordan Tucker at 4'1", and Sean McDermott at 5'5", is a decent, but not somebody who's going to be in my player pool, but a decent tournament play. All right, UConn versus Indiana. Let's get into some more exciting games. KenPom has an Indiana 73-70. They're 119th tempo ranking. UConn 178th tempo ranking. This is an interesting one. I think this is going to be a nice game to target. Right off the bat, I really like Trace Jackson Davis. You're gonna pay a premium on him at 8-1, but this matchup against UConn has yielded nice results to the interior. And he's coming off a bad game against Wisconsin where he only had 14 fantasy points. He wasn't in foul trouble, he just wasn't effective. I think he's going to see well over the 30 minutes, which he's going to need to hit the 30-32 mark, and I think he's got room for more. So I like him. Like I said, I haven't tried to build lineups yet, but if I'm looking at Indiana, he's one of the guys that I'm certainly looking at. Pull up some efficiency rates here. Excuse me. 21% usage rate. He's got a combined rebounding rate of 38%. We love seeing that. 9.5% block rate. And he's actually drawing 7 fouls per 40. So you want to look out about using guys like a Josh Carlton or any other interior players like Akok. Those guys tomorrow are likely to see foul trouble. Now, a tournament play extraordinaire is probably Justin Smith. He's a guy who, you know, he's priced at 5'9", which is pretty appealing because he has the ability and the upside to completely shatter 5'9". I mean, just last week, he was priced at 7K. So he's a whole, you know, 1,000 cheaper than he was at that time, and he's already shown 40, 30, 35-point upside. Opponents were easier, like a Troy or an SDSU, but, you know, the Wisconsin game, he didn't do anything. He had 13. So I have my reservations about him. I do think he's a great tournament play, and I think he may end up being semi-popular even in cash and main team formats. Devontae Green's price has gone up. He's the other Indiana guy that I absolutely love. I hate that the price went up to 6'3", but, you know, when you're smashing your price tag at 5'6 with a 46 against FSU, you know, and consistently hitting 20 to 25 fantasy points, that's what's going to happen. So he's priced a little bit higher than I'd like to use because he's more than likely going to hit somewhere between 20 and 25, but you know that you have that upside. I don't think that he's going to be hitting 46 as a ceiling anytime soon again, but he is a very safe option as opposed to somebody like, you know, Al Durham or if you're dumpster diving down to Amon Franklin. So those are the two I feel safe about Indiana plays with Justin Smith as a tourney guy. For UConn, you know, Christian Vitale is an absolute monster when it comes to usage. His price is kind of come down a little bit overall from what it was to start the year. He has shot rate 26%, usage rate 26%, and then he is combined rebounding rate of 27%. He just seems to grab a ton, not offensive rebounds, but defensive rebounds. That's just, he's always around the ball, and he must know angles very well because he's always grabbing boards. But yeah, if you see his price, he was at 9K at some points to start the year. Now he's leveled off about 8.4. He has 3 straight games of under 30. This is one where I could see him taking enough volume and getting enough rebounds, even with Jackson Davis down there, that he could make value. I think he's more of a tourney play, being on the road, and I think that cash games we can leave him off. Josh Carlton is a guy that I will roster. And I've been rostering him, but the last few games that he's on the slate, I haven't, because I even though he hurt me with that 30 against Miami at 6'4", I find that fading him, especially if he's chalk, which I doubt he will end up being chalk at this price, but when he has been, the fade has worked out pretty well. The problem with him is he gets himself into foul trouble, and this is a matchup where we know Trayce Jackson-Davis is going to get the big boys into foul trouble. He hasn't been the last 3 games, but are we looking at his opponent? We see, you know, Miami did a good job staying out of trouble, and then Maine and Iona. Those are not teams that we're going to worry about him getting into much foul trouble. He was just ineffective in that game, and it was a blowout, and they didn't need him. But, you know, games where he did get in foul trouble, obviously Xavier fouled out, Florida, Buffalo, St. Joe's. So I have my concerns about him. I think you're really rolling the dice a bit using him on the road against Indiana. Book Knight is there at 5'6", Gilbert 5'9". These are okay prices. There's not a lot here for me to look at and say, yeah, this is a slam dunk. I think they're all, if you ask me tomorrow about using any of those guys, I think I'll say they're fine, but I don't think any of them really excites me. I do like Trayce Jackson-Davis's price at 7'4" on FanDuel quite a bit. All right, before we move on, let's put a caller from the 262 on the line. Hello, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Walter? Long time no talk.
Good.
This is Scott.
Oh, Scott. Scotty Too Hotty. How are you, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just like you, trying to get the bad taste of a rough weekend out of my mouth and looking forward to this good slate we have here tomorrow, so. But
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's been a nice one. Yeah. You've been red hot though. You've been like super red hot. So yeah. I think this past couple of days have just been a bad variance, because it seems like guys who never hit rock bottom floors have been just hitting like 15 and 10, like really bad scores lately. So I don't know. I think it's just kind of a rough patch we're on.
Yeah, it has. Well, yesterday I would have been fine, but I had Sandro and he got hurt right away, so his zero hurt me. But other than him, my lineup was pretty decent, so that was just bad luck. But I had enough good luck early in the season that, you know, you go with the ebbs and flows, so you get some good breaks, you get some bad ones. So just chalk it up to one of those bad ones and move on to tomorrow.
Yeah. Speaking of which, have you gotten to dig into the slate at all, or what have you looked at?
Yeah, I've been digging it while listening to your show, and it's seems like the key is gonna be hitting the mid range right, and then picking the right. I mean, I'm sure most will have one or two of the 8K range guys that are. I mean, there's like at least five of them that I think have very good matchups and are attractive and should get value, but if you hit the one that gets the 6X or 5.5X instead of the one who just gets 4X, that'll be a separator between Nuora, Stevens, Jalen Smith, and Jackson Davis, and Jalen Harris. That all those guys are right around the same price and all good matchups, so it's just going to be deciding which one to go there and get the right one. But I know I'm locking in Yoli Childs. That's the one I got in 100% right now. So.
Yeah, I was about to round to that game shortly, but I'm definitely going to have him too. Even at the 9K, it's just way too safe.
Yeah. But the stuff you said on the earlier games, I'm pretty much in agreement as usual. We both think alike and usually end up with the same cores, so, or at least pretty similar. And we usually have like 2-versus-2s or 3-versus-3s in our lineups. So. But I'm thinking pretty much the same way as you as we go. And definitely I'm going to avoid Carlton because being on the road and he's a fouler and Jackson Davis draws fouls. And like I said, it's getting to the point where you get more close matchups that lean towards guys at home versus the ones on the road. So and same with McDermott's one who historically has terrible home road splits where he's so much better shooter at home than on the road. And this year they've only had three games on the road, and he's shooting 30% from three. And so he's one that even though he's coming off a big game, I'm hoping people use because I assume he'll bust out at Baylor since he's on the road and they're a solid defense. So that's one that I would not play.
Yeah, the Butler guys, like I said, I'm just not sure how they're – I don't have a lot of interest in them either. It's just I wonder if people are going to be using them in cash. Like Kamar, what's your opinion on Kamar? Because usually every slate, he's been massive chalk. Do you think that's going to continue, or do you think people will kind of jump off?
No, I don't think he'll be super chalk. I mean, I think he'll be maybe in the 20 to 30% range. So he'll be – halfway popular, but like I said, with the 8K guys, pretty good, and I don't see him super chalk since they're on the road, and Baylor's a good defense, but, to me, he's a solid play anytime for cash, just because they need him to be good on offense, because they don't have anyone else that can create their own shot, so he has to create it for everyone, and, but like you said, the key is Tucker, that I wrote him off years ago or last year and never even consider him because all he does is stand around. He's not aggressive on the boards, but he's been shooting better and he's been fairly consistent lately. So he's a guy that I actually am considering tomorrow. I haven't considered him all year, but tomorrow is the first time that he's on my radar and I'm worried.
I know, because I feel like as the day goes on, it's going to be like, oh, join Tucker and talk yourself into it. But while I got you, it's good because DK added the quote-unquote bye game with Kansas versus UWM, Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Yeah. Ken Bum has it. A lot of people have already said to me they wish they hadn't, but it's nice to have an extra game, but it also sucks because like this one, Ken Pom has an 81-57 for Kansas, 107 tempo ranking, UWM 137. It's like you don't want to maybe roster them because of the blowout, but at the same time, their guys are going to do whatever they want. You know, Dotson has been crazy good. Marcus Garrett is kind of interesting to me at 6'3", just because his like peripheral stats are so nice. He had 4 steals last game, 6 assists. Gives him kind of 30-point upside at that price because of the fact that, you know, he can get steals and assists and rebounds. But what do you know about Wisconsin-Milwaukee you can tell people, and how do you approach this type of game? Because it seems like I want to fade it, but at the same time, if they're scoring 80, I need to maybe have some pieces of it.
Right. That's definitely a good question. As far as UWM goes, I really haven't followed them much the last couple years because they are not – on TV a ton, and they haven't been good enough to make me really want to go down and watch them. But a lot of it depends on Tajon Lucas, that he missed last game with an injury, and he basically does everything for UWM. He transferred over from Illinois, and he's easily their best player. So a lot depends on if he plays, but I haven't found any injury news on him yet. I would fade UWM unless if he sits out, then both Abram and Allen, they're pretty good athletes and they seem to do a little bit of everything. So at their cheaper price, their usage will go up, and it did last game with Lucas out. So that's the only thing I would consider on UWM is just if Lucas is out, I'd consider Allen and Abram. As far as Kansas, I usually, in blowouts, I always look at the history just to see – one, how many minutes the starters play when in their blowout games, and then two, just see who does well, because like Marcus Howard's a guy, and there's a lot of like Markel Johnson's a guy I'll never play in blowout games because they're just point guards that could score anytime they want, but they just let their teammates score because they'll be able to get shots, and they kind of defer to everyone else, which is why I wouldn't play Dotson in this one, even though he should get a lot of peripherals. I don't see him scoring a lot, so I think at that price, it's way too much for me. So like you, if I play Kansas, I'd lean Garrett just because he also gets peripherals, but he seems to score a little bit more when they play the weaker teams. It's still kind of borderline whether to use them. What I usually do is, especially on talented blue blood teams like Kansas or Duke or something, I look at their reserves, because if their reserves are suddenly getting 15 to 20 minutes instead of 5 to 10 minutes, that a lot of them are a lot more talented than the guys that they'll be playing against, so they can rack up stats in a hurry. Like D'Souza and Isaiah Moss is probably a guy I'm going to use tomorrow, just because he shoots all the time and love shooting, so if he gets 20 minutes playing against scrubs, that he can rack up points in a hurry. So if there isn't a lot of value on a slate, that's what I'll do. I'll look to a team that's going to win by a lot and look at their reserves that are cheaper and hope that they get a minute uptick. So the one I'm kind of debating is Azubuike, because UWM's fairly small, and he should be able to dominate, but again, how often are they going to go in the post, and how many minutes is he going to play? So he's one that's I'm kind of on the fence on, but most likely I'll have some Garrett and Moss for sure, and maybe some Enaruna as well, because he's another great athlete, and also in blowouts, freshmen seem to want to get their shots up because they like getting the stats and think it'll help them earn playing time. So a lot of times the freshmen will be shootaholics in blowouts. So he's one that I will consider as well, but probably more a GPP play just because he's hasn't been consistent, even though he's getting more minutes, but he hasn't really put up a lot of fantasy points per minute. So, but I would consider him. So like I said, mainly just look at, in general, just look at the minutes played and blowouts by starters so you know how many minutes you're thinking about and or getting, and go from there.
Yeah, and with Azubuike and Dotson, they're both probably going to hit like 28 to 32 at worst,
right,
which is fine, but you definitely want more, especially if you're playing in tournaments, you know, you want closer to that 40 number. because Dotson looks good looking through his logs. But yeah, if you get like a 30 from right there, you're probably going to be way behind. So that's the issue. I've been having issues. I had Ogbaji earlier this year, and he went off for me against Duke. But then I kind of backed off him, and I hadn't been using him again. And then I missed out on his 42 game last game. So he's another guy that I look at and maybe this blowout that's going to continue to, you know, he does a lot. He's very athletic, obviously, but if he's going to rebound like he did last game on the fast breaks, I could see him, you know, demolishing that 6-2 tag. Do you have any interest in him?
He's more a GPP play because, like I said, until recently, he really doesn't get many rebounds or assists, and he's usually not a steals guy. Oh, he's been getting at least a steal a game, so that's good. But he's definitely in consideration. But I don't know. Like I said, maybe a GPP share, depends on how many lineups I throw into the $15. I kind of vary depending on how I like the slate. So definitely. Like I said, get some, because right now I'm struggling a little bit putting a lineup together on the mid-range. So those mid-range Kansas guys are definitely an option because, like you said, their floor is going to be really high, that they should all get at least 3X even if they play limited minutes. So, but you're just limiting your upside, so you have to make sure your other picks hit, and you're just using these guys just as a placeholder just to keep you on pace.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll move on to the next game here. You're gonna, I don't know, you want to hang out for a little while and talk about the game if you want. All right,
yeah,
cool.
I can stick around.
So Nevada BYU. This is a game that I was looking at before the slates posted the games. You know, I was due ahead to see, and this was a game I thought FanDuel would have for sure, and not DK, and it was the other way around. So I'm glad, because I certainly want to have a bunch of shares of this. KenPom has it 80-73 for BYU. Nevada 91st in tempo, BYU 157, so BYU at home getting a nice tempo boost. Yoeli Childs is back from his suspension. If you guys don't know who he is, you definitely want to know who he is. That game against Utah, it was I had stacked the Utah side and Toulson, and unfortunately didn't play Childs because I was worried that, you know, even though it wasn't an injury, that he might be a little rusty. But he quickly showed the world that he had no rust at all. He had 29-7 with 2 steals and an assist in just 25 minutes of action, 42 fantasy points. And then the game after that, a couple days later against UNLV, in which they destroyed UNLV, in 23 minutes he had 13-14 for another 39 fantasy points. So, yes, he is 9K, but he is a very safe option. He was a guy that was just, you know, completely terrorizing the WCC last year. He's very good. You look at his early, you know, the two games he's been playing, he has a 40% shot rate and a 37% usage rate. And granted, this is two games, these numbers will normalize a little, but a 44% defensive rebounding rate to start. So he's just an absolute monster, a guy that you definitely want. I really like Jake Toulson as well. You know, he had a 25% shot rate, but now that Yoeli Childs is there, Toulson is probably going to need his price to come down a little bit. You see, the game against Utah, he had no problems. That game did go to overtime, so he, you know, had some elevated minutes and whatnot, and he had 51. But it's nice because Toulson has that in his bag, but you see the last game against UNLV where they blew them out, he only had 16. So I'm a little more leery about using him with Childs back. I know they don't play the same position, but it goes that the usage and the shots are going to be funneled inside to Childs a lot more. So Toulson will have to get, you know, his best bet is to deliver the ball down low to Childs to try to rack assists, maybe get some steals, you know, and then on the kick out, if they decide to double Yoeli, you know, hitting three. So that's going to be his best bet. But for 7K, I want that guy to handle the ball more or have more usage. So I'd probably take a little bit more of a wait and see with him, but I do still think he's in play for this game. But Childs, definitely. I haven't played TJ Haws at all this year. I'm probably still not going to. People always ask me why. It's not that I don't like his game. I rarely see a need to roster him because he defers a lot. When they need him to score, which they did against without Childs, you know, he's fully capable, but he's just not a DFS guy that I typically use. His price is starting to lower to an amount where I may start paying attention to him. Like if next late he's under 6K, I'll certainly, you know, have a long look. So I'm still kind of on that. You know, value guys we were using before, Colby Lee, are kind of lost value now. Zach Zeljaz, some of these guys who are reliant on rebounding. With Childs back, I don't think they're really that good of plays now. Nevada is Jalen Harris. You guys might remember, you know, from the very first slate, he got hurt early on and then only had two fantasy points.
Don't remind me.
Drew ended up going up. But since then, and healthy, he has 6 games of 40 or more fantasy points, and 5 of those have been consecutively. And, you know, they're not super stiff opponents. Fordham's actually a decent team. Valparaiso and Bowling Green are, you know, not great, but he's been in Air Force is probably not great, but he's been dropping some huge scores and only priced at 8-2 against BYU. I think he may end up being semi-popular. For 300 less, you can maybe go with a guy in Lindsey Drew who has just as much, you know, upside as we saw with that 56. Obviously, with Harris back, he's not going to approach that again. But he's also a pretty safe play for roughly 30 to 32 fantasy points at that tag because it's really just those two guys that are taking all the shots. You know, Jazz Johnson is still there, and he's shown the last couple of games 30 fantasy points as well. But 6'8 is a hard ask for mainly the third option. But it really goes to show you how Nevada has been playing, you know, pretty fast this year, and they don't have the Martin brothers, the black hole of the Martin brothers to – if they get it, they're shooting it. So, you know, and there's more shots to go around and more of a sharing of the ball. Harris, 31% shot rate. Jazz Johnson actually has a 27.5% shot rate. And then Lindsey Drew's right around 20%. But he has a 26% assist rate. Jalen Harris, a 30% assist rate. So those two guys very much in play. I don't know that I'd be using any, you know, Zane Meeks or Nisri Zuzua, any of those guys. I think I'd stick my exposure to those guys and avoid the bigs against Childs because they're probably going to get dominated. But this is a game that you definitely want to have multiple shares in, right, Scott?
Absolutely. And like you said, not only good offenses, but neither of them really have stingy defense. So, you know, points will be had, so and it'll be a faster pace and – definitely like it. Like I said, Harris and Childs are the studs, and they stick out and will be popular, and definitely will have a lot of them. I do prefer Johnson over Drew, just because, I mean, Drew's more a peripheral guy, which usually helps his floor, but he really, I don't think he has a scoring upside as long as Harris is on there, because Harris and Johnson shoot so much, but Johnson, like you said, is more scoring dependent, but there will be plenty of points in this. And like Tyler Hawes isn't a great defender, so depending, I guess it kind of depends on which one he'll end up guarding that could affect things. And as you said, Colby Lee had been a value play when Childs was out, and I just saw he wasn't playing any minutes the last two games, so I just assumed that it was because Childs was back and they were just going with one big. Well, then I saw that he was in extreme foul trouble both of those games. So originally I was going to plug in Dalton Nixon because he's more of a stretch four, and it seems like he's been getting shooting better since Childs came back. So I'm guessing that Childs drawing the defense gives him more open looks at three. And he's also a decent rebounder, so I was going to use him because he's getting all of Lee's minutes. But if their plan is to play Lee and Childs together, as long as Lee doesn't get in foul trouble, then that could diminish Nixon's upside. That if he only gets 15 minutes instead of 20 to 25, that would be tough. But like I said, you could just go with the studs and just – I know I'll have a GPP where I have Harris, Toulson, and Childs all together, and possibly one other piece, whether I go with Johnson or add a third BYU guy and put in. I mean, I've had good luck with Celius just because the coaches seem to trust him, so that when they're in closer games, he seems to always be in at the end, and he can hit threes and does a little bit of everything. He's not – his minutes aren't safe enough and his stats aren't consistent enough really to use in cash, but he's one that would definitely use in GPPs. And Zuza from Nevada, he's another guy that is a decent GPP that he has an occasional game where he'll score a lot. And so if the attention's going to the big guys, then sometimes he can get more shots. And I agree with you, Hawes is a fade. I've used him a fair amount just because he gets enough assists and is always on the floor and always has the ball, and he can score if need be. But I just, with Toulson and Childs, I don't see the need for him to score either, so he will be a complete fade for me as well. But definitely get shares of this game.
Yeah, and when you go down the line of BYU, you see like seven guys, maybe even eight, that are like 20 to 25 minutes. Even, you know, Childs may end up getting more, but you look at even like Toulson, you know, even the games without Childs, you know, he had like right around 30. I know he had 37 against Virginia Tech, but there were some games where he was at 29, and you know, they're going down now, obviously, with Childs. But then you see Hawes is right on 25, Barcella 25. So it's like, you know, they're just super efficient, I think is what it is, but they're all roughly kind of capped at the 20 to 25, and I expect Child's minutes to go up. So I kind of like the Nixon call, but I noticed he's 5'3", and that's a little bit more of a tougher ask. So that might be too risky for a main team, but he does look pretty decent. All right, last game on the slate. Go ahead.
With Nick said, you some of the guys' minutes going down, but a lot of that's just because they blew out two of the last three opponents, so that's probably a bigger reason of why Toulson and Hawes' minutes went down, not just Child's back, more that they were winning by a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
All right, last game on here, Northern Iowa versus Colorado. KenPom has it 69-59 for Colorado. They're 123rd in pace. Northern Iowa, very slow, 314th. Northern Iowa has the white AJ Green. If you want to use a Northern Iowa guy for whatever reason, he would be the one. AJ Green, he's got, let's pull up his, I was looking at him earlier. Forsey always makes a point to mention him when he's on the slate or if
shoot.
He's playing well. Yeah, he's at 31.5% shooting shot percentage, 28% usage rate, and a 20% assist rate. So he's definitely looking at all the Northern Iowa guys, you know, they're on the road in Colorado, tough spot to play anyways, 59 points. Probably don't really need a ton of them, but I think AJ Green at 6'1 is a nice tournament play. He's probably not going to be that owned, but he's going to take like 15 to 20 shots, and he may volume his way to, you know, maybe even 5X. If he can hit a bunch of threes, he can get you to 30 quite easily. So I definitely would look at him if you're running multiple lineups. We know by now that home Tyler Bay is the best kind of Bay. When he's on the road for whatever reason in the past, he hasn't really been that great. This year he has, but he's played a couple of games that were neutral court. So he's right around 40-40 on his splits. That may normalize, or maybe that's just the new him, but I'm still going with the home Tyler Bay. He's under 9K this time, so he's very much in consideration. It's probably going to be much too difficult to fit Childs and Bay and a guy like Jalen Harris without punting a few spots. I'm not that comfortable with this slate with all the value like I have been in the past, so it's a little bit more difficult. So I think you're going to have to decide on one or the other. I think Bay's a fine option, clearly. He's, you know, huge upside. He does everything for Colorado. Let's look at his efficiency rankings. Shot rate's really not there, which might surprise you guys, but he does a lot of his work on the glass and putback. So he only has a 19% shot rate, but the usage rate is 26%. His rebounding rate is 48% combined, 37% on the defensive side, and a 19% assist rate, 5% steal rate, and a 7% block rate. And he is second in the country with almost seventh in the country with almost 8 fouls drawn per 40. So he draws a ton of fouls, gets himself to the foul line a lot. A very safe option. So obviously love Tyler Bay. McKinley Wright is a guy that, if I recall, you used him a few times last year, and we were usually on him. He's priced at 6'7", which seems like a really nice price, but he's just been kind of, you know, not him. He doesn't look like the old McKinley Wright, and I don't know if he's taking a back seat now because Tyler Bay's team and kind of the emergence of the front court with Evan Beatty, you know, taking a step forward this year. Not quite sure. I haven't seen enough Colorado games. I've only seen one. I was looking at the Clemson game, and it just didn't look like, you know, based off his game logs, that he's been the same guy. And even the Clemson game, you know, he took a decent number of shots, but he was involved. But there was a few plays where he didn't even touch the ball as the guard, which was a little surprising. Gatling Gun, as I affectionately call him, Shane Gatling, he's dead. Can't use him.
Daylon Coutts hasn't really made a step up forward like I thought he would. And you know, Lucas Seward and Deshaun Swartz are both guys who have upsides for big games based on how they're shooting. But, you know, then you have some games where, like, Deshaun Swartz shoots 16%. So it's hard to really trust him, and his price is up higher this year. It has gone down to 5-6 from where it was earlier. But last year, he was always like 4-4 and 4-5 and 3-7 and all that good stuff. So where's your head at for this game?
It's pretty much going to be a fade for me. Just two slow-paced games. And like I said, I thought about either Batty or Seward's been getting minutes. And he's got some skill, but he just, I mean, he's not used a lot by Colorado. The one thing, I mean, not only the price and the slow pace, the reason I'm fading Bay is looking at Northern Iowa's games when they've played teams with bigs, like West Virginia. They're two bigs, Culver and Shimwe. They combined for only 8 shot attempts. And there's another team, maybe South Carolina's bigs, that every time when they play bigs, the bigs that they're against don't get shot attempts. So my guess without ever watching them is that they are a team that doubles the post and really sags in and make you beat them from the perimeter. So I just, even though Bay does shoot threes and can play on the perimeter and is athletic enough, I just think he's limited a bit if he's not down in the post, because it's less chances for offensive rebounds. And like I said, it looks like they're doubling down, or it's more definitely made me get away from Batty, where originally I kind of liked him. And Northern Iowa, like you said, Green takes all the shots and he doesn't foul at all, so you know he'll stay on the court and he's got a chance to do stuff. But I just don't really feel comfortable using any of them on the road in this one, as I think it could be a low scoring, ugly game. So Brown is the other one that I looked at for Northern Iowa, that he's got some scoring ability and gets some rebounds, but he just kind of does a little of stuff. He's not really good at anything, so I probably won't use him either. And also too, he can easily get in foul trouble with Bay and Batty on the other side. So I'm just not really a big fan of this game, so I'll probably just fade it all together.
That's a good call out. Looking at the South Carolina game, it looks like A.J. Lawson did all the work, and then West Virginia was the Miles McBride semi-breakout. He had 18 points. So, yeah, that's a good call out.
It could be a McKinley Wright game.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And Culver had, you know, he only had 3 points. He had 15 rebounds. So, it could be a game where Bay, you know, only scores 6 points but has, like, 18 boards and, you know, 5 assists or something like that. But, yeah, you're right. If he's not going to be shooting, you're still – even though his peripherals are so good, you're still asking for a lot without scoring the ball.
Correct.
So maybe his ceiling is a little bit lower. I think he's still probably a fairly big lock to hit, you know, 32 at worst, but you definitely want to be on the side of maybe Childs, who's going to hit 40 plus. So
yeah.
Good call out. I like that.
And the other thing with Batty is Northern Iowa doesn't really have guys that draw a lot of fouls. So that's the one thing you always worry about with Batty, is that he gets in foul trouble at times. So I agree with you. I think his floor is fairly safe.
Yeah, definitely. So with that, that kind of wraps up the slate. Why don't we get from you, you know, your favorite overall play, without giving away too much of your strat, and then somebody that because I always have this on my content, I always have a bust of the slate. Who would be your bust of the slate, where you think he's going to totally bomb?
I would go with Carlton of UConn, just because I see fouls in his future. And he's higher priced. Like I said, him and McDermott are two guys that I have on my bus list for sure. And since Carlton's more expensive and usually more popular, people don't play McDermott much anyway. So I'll go with Josh Carlton as my bust of the night.
Like it. How about your favorite?
That's pretty cool. For cash, it's Lamar Stevens. He's guaranteed 4X and going. But as far as a guy, I think they can get 5 or 6X and fairly confident. I don't know. I'll still stay with Yoeli Childs, even though he's 9,000. I think he gets 5X for sure.
I like it too, and I wonder, because of the fact that there's so, you know, that 8K range, you know, has Stevens, Jackson Davis, Harris, Nyora, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe even Vital in there. There's so many of them that maybe people don't even feel they need to pay for Childs. So maybe that drives his ownership.
Or Colin is always popular too, and Baldwin. That there's a lot of popular guys in that range. So, I mean, I have one or two from that range plus Childs. I mean, right now I have two in, but I'm still forming the lineup, but I too hope that Childs goes low owned because of his price, and or even people go with Tyler Bay instead just because he's 300 cheaper and he's been just as dominant. So I'm hoping Childs goes lower owned as well.
This might be one of the first slates of the year that I can initially see where there's not just a ton of, you know, 40 to 60, even 70% owned guys. Even you've seen some of these bigger slates that are 5 or 6 games, and the pricing or the games have pushed everybody in. You know, there's a lot more information this year. Granted, I know I'm putting information out, but there's other people putting information out this year too. There's a second year, so people are, you know, learning. They know the teams as opposed to last year, and it seems like guys who are good plays now are just super high owned. This seems like the first slate where I can confidently say that the ownership will be spread out, and that's going to make things interesting tomorrow night for sure, especially at the higher dollar stuff, the 33, the 50, the 150, where, you know, guys are typically 40% owned if they're any good at all. So this will be a nice, interesting evening for sure.
I agree, and those are the slates I like where there's a lot of variety. I think we did have one earlier this year where there was like the mid-range was just fantastic, where there were like 10 to 12 good mid-range plays. So it allowed for a variety of lineups and that people could go different routes. And I like you, I prefer that over the ones where there's 3 chalk plays. So then it's just the other 5 people have the same amount of money, and it's pretty much 1 or 2 versus 2 or 3 versus 3 lineups. And I prefer variety.
Yeah, and it protects you from mistakes more. Like, if you have a guy that bombs out, you're not necessarily dead. Like, on the chalkier nights, you're dead because there's only this guy or this guy at that price range. If he busts and the other guy goes off, you're dead. But this is where, you know, there's probably going to be multiple guys tomorrow that bust. We always think these type of slates, might be high scoring because of this, and then it ends up being, you know, 250 to dink it, and you know, all of a sudden 190 to 210 is cashing, you know, double up, so there'll be some guys that bomb out tomorrow for sure. Hopefully we're able to avoid them because we're definitely due for a big win.
Yes, we are.
Cool.
Time
well,
for
thanks
you to
a lot,
ship
man.
A big
I appreciate
one.
You calling in. I know. I need it. I need it. All right, man. I appreciate it. We'll have you on again real soon.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Always good to talk to you, Walter. Keep up the good work.
All right. Yeah. That is a great song. Scott Wilson-Dink, the Wisconsin-Milwaukee aficionado, our Marquette expert. Always good talking to him. Very, very, very fierce competitor in Dynasty League and on a hot streak for DFS. So that was what makes me think the last couple of days were outlier days. Because even if he's struggling, that tells me that I don't need to get too down on myself. So appreciate everybody who continues to support the show and the RotoCurve content that we push out. We will be doing at least 3 shows per week going forward. That is my commitment to you. And then, as you guys know, as we get closer to March, I start doing them every night. I'm a freak for this. I love it. Best of luck tomorrow. I will have content up for those of you who do sub in the next couple hours. I'll be staying up late. Good luck. I'll be around on Twitter. If you need me, add DubDeuces85.
Yeah.